everyone, and thank you again for joining us this month on the Remember to Breathe podcast. And before we begin, I would just like us all to take one moment to stop what you're doing and just take a moment out of your day to pause. So just stop what you're doing right now. If you can, just close down your eyes. Relax your body for a moment. And then just take a deep breath. In through the nose, deep into the belly, allow it to rise up the chest, and then just let it out with a sigh. We're just gonna do that one more time together, and I want you to ask yourself, what am I ready to let go of? Perhaps something has pissed you off today. So perhaps the day has not gone how you expected. I'm gonna give you the permission right now with that exhale, with that sigh, just to let it go. So together now, let's take a big, deep breath in through the nose, and let it out with a sigh. And just relax. Thank you so much. I think it's so important just to have those little check-ins with your body. Where am I? Am I in the present moment? So thank you again for joining us this month. As you know, last month was our first ever episode, and I'm feeling a little less nervous this month, which I'm very grateful for. And I'm feeling also really proud of all the views that we've had and just putting a message out there. I think is a really important thing, to step past our fears, to step into the discomfort, because that's where growth lives. So thank you all for being on that journey with us. I'm really, really grateful. So this month, our theme is self-expression. Last month, we were authentic self. And so this month, we're going into self-expression. And self-expression, what does that exactly mean? And think about it. Okay, what is my self-expression? That is my ability to communicate. That is sharing with the world my thoughts, my beliefs, my feelings, not feeling conditioned or having to act a certain way or should be a certain person. And then if you look at that kind of self-expression, you think about, okay, communication. How I communicate my inner world outward, how I communicate my inner state of being to the outside world, and that is so powerful. And you'll hear me say this a few times, a lot of times, that communication is our superpower, and it is your responsibility to learn how to communicate, to honor the power of communication, to respect it. And that's communication not only with yourself to others, but also that little voice in your head. That voice is telling you what you should, what you shouldn't, what people expect of you. It's also how to learn how to accept that voice, acknowledge it's not all of you, and learn to kind of not ignore it, not push it away, but learn to live with it, I think is the best way of saying that. So following the normal kind of structure that we do in the workshop, today's podcast is gonna follow with the Let Go, Align, Create. Let go, that could be let go of self-sabotage, of things that no longer serve you, of criticism. Letting go from the mind and from the body is a really powerful thing, because first we have to let go to begin to make space in our lives, which then we can align with our values, our beliefs, our interests, our passions, our joy. And then we go into the create section, which is creating with the universe. It's dancing, allowing us to use these energetics to kind of manifest our dreams, our desires. So let go, align, create is a really powerful formula. And today with self-expression, if we're gonna let go, what are we gonna be letting go of? If I want to be in my fullest authentic expression, what do I have to do? And for me, what really resonated was I have to let go of self-abandonment and people-pleasing. And this is a big one. People-pleasing is a big one. I think it's something we can all resonate and relate to. And what exactly is people-pleasing? People-pleasing is when you put the needs of others before the needs of your own, whilst abandoning or sacrificing your own needs. And that's the really important part, because it's not just putting the needs of others before your own, because sometimes we need to do that. You know, there are things in life we have to do, but it is really the self-abandonment. It's sacrificing. It's saying a yes when your body is tense, and it's saying no. And this is something personally that has been a whole journey in my life that I'm really getting to learn to say no, getting to learn to know what is right in my body and feels right for me. And I think is a big topic that everyone can resonate with, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in all parts of your life. Maybe it's just with work or family or love or money. Like, it can be a few little things. And as we're saying that, I want you to have like a little think, okay, where do I feel like I'm not honoring my truth? And that's where I'd like to ask you, Angelo, where do you feel like people-pleasing or self-abandonment has resonated in maybe your life or your journey with it?
So for me, people-pleasing was not an issue in terms of like me struggling with it and not being able to say no or set my boundaries. It was more the cultural view of people-pleasing being normalized. Like, so when you say people-pleasing, sometimes it's like hard. You think of someone who's like kissing ass or like, you know, to that extreme of people-pleasing, and you're like, oh, I don't do that kind of. But a lot of what I realize people-pleasing is, which a lot of people kind of associate with, is being nice. The term of like, and like when you're told, oh, don't say that, that's not nice. Or if you, because most of the times when you're being honest, sometimes it's not the most pleasant thing, but that's considered rude. But you're being honest. And like, there are ways you can be rude and like, you know, not be pleasant in the way you say it. But sometimes like honesty is viewed as being rude. And like, say what you think they want to hear and don't hurt their feelings. So for me, that I always viewed being nice when it was portrayed like in culture as like very dishonest, inauthentic, and to a certain extent selfish, because it's the selfish part comes from you not wanting to hurt the other person's feelings because you don't want to be the person to do that, or you don't want to deal with the awkward situation of being honest with them and their feelings getting hurt and then you having to deal with them being upset. So that kind of, to me, even as a kid, seemed selfish, but then I didn't understand it, right? I couldn't really put two and two together, so it was always like I was considered a rude person because I was very strong with the setting the boundaries, trying to be as honest as I can. I have lied, obviously, and like I have done that, but like there are so many instances where I wanted to be honest when someone asked me my opinion. Like, let's say someone cooks something for me or asks me how they look, like how their outfit looks. And I'd want to be honest and share my opinion on it, right? And I felt like that's what they're looking for. But a lot of times when I was honest, it was like, why are you being so rude? Like, they asked you how they look, like, be nice, say something nice. And like, that really was a conflict for me. And like, I was like, I'm being honest, which I'm taught to do, like in the general sense, but when I am being honest, it's considered rude. So like, what's the middle line? So people-pleasing was always more of a conflict for me to try and understand, like what is the middle line of, should I be honest or should I be, like, nice? So then recently only I came to that understanding of, oh, being nice is just all those things, inauthentic, because you're not sharing your honest opinion. It's not honest, because you're not being truthful to it. And it can fall under being selfish. And recently I heard someone say how detached from reality it is, which was really fascinating to think of, because if you think about it, you're in my head, it's what might hurt you. I don't even know if that'll hurt you. Yeah. I'm just assuming that what I'm going to say is going to hurt you, and like, that's in my head. So I'm like creating your character and like being in your head. So like, how many steps detached from reality is that? Like, I can ask you, like, if I were to say this, like, how would you feel? Or I can actually say it and then see how you feel and be like, what will help kind of make you feel better, right? And go into that, the idea of communication, like communicating it, rather than assuming like, oh, she might get upset, so I won't say it. So because of that, I'll say this, which might make her feel good. And like, all in my head, but so detached from like, how you'll actually think about it.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true. And like, you think about that and like my head goes, what? Like, it's like almost like a level of like controlling.
Yeah.
And it's so nice how you, like, I love the fact that you use the word, you think of the word nice and you think of the word honest. And like, you know, as a kid, you're like, be honest. But then it's like, well, where do you want me to be honest? Do you want me to be honest, or do you want me to be nice? Or, and I heard something really beautiful. It was like, there's a difference between being nice and being kind.
Yes.
And that was a real one for me, because it was all the way through my 20s, I was always a people pleaser. And I was so deep in people pleasing that I didn't even know I was a people pleaser, if you know what I mean. It's not like, oh, I'm a people pleaser. Like, this is on a subconscious level, where growing up with a single parent household, we were very much helped mum, which is a thing we had to do, and that was fine. But I gained a lot of validation through helping mum. And I could see that obviously we'd gone through a hard time, and that my doing gave me this validation. And it was almost like I subconsciously wired this pattern that if I put her needs first, I can fix stuff. And as you know, a teenager and a young girl doing this, like, you just think, oh, I just want to fix stuff. No, I just want to make everyone get on, and I want it to be nice, and I don't want the arguments, and I just want this safety. And that's the thing. It's like, subconsciously with people pleasing, you are just wanting to maintain a level of safety. And you're people pleasing because there's fear within the honesty.
Exactly.
And it's that fear of, like, if I tell the truth and the other person can't receive it, I'm scared that perhaps I'll be abandoned, or, you know, something like that. And so it's like, I want people to know that with people pleasing, one, it's subconscious, it's unconscious. We don't know we're doing it most of the time. And secondly, it's because your nervous system wants you to stay safe.
Yeah.
You know, but it is a real, and, you know, if I told myself these things that we're saying now about people pleasing 10 years ago, I'd have been like, no way. No way. I am just helping people because I'm a better person, or I just don't have time to look after myself because all these people need me. It's this kind of lie we tell ourselves. So we create a new truth. Like you said, like, you assume in that moment that maybe someone can't handle the truth, or I'm going to hurt. You've taken away someone's, you're controlling. You've taken away someone's right to react. And it's really interesting.
Exactly. You take away that opportunity for them to respond and to get the, like, truth, the reality of it, right? Like, what they might actually feel. And I think it's nice, like, what you mentioned about if 10 years ago you were told this, you'd be like, no. Like, you'd disagree that you were that. I think what you mentioned about fear, it's usually kind of, it is, it stems from fear, but it's hidden with giving you a sense of purpose. Like, you have convinced yourself that it's purposeful. Like, this is my purpose. Like you mentioned, I need to fix stuff. I need to keep the peace. Like, this is my role. So it doesn't seem like stemming from fear. You have conditioned or convinced yourself that this is my purpose, but not knowing that you're sacrificing yourself in that so-called purpose, that, like, the fear that's hidden as purpose.
Completely. And I think the hard thing is, like, when you're a people pleaser, is that you don't even know your own needs, because maybe there was a time when you had to have this role and you become attached to this role, and then this role becomes your identity, and then you're so in the doing rather than the being that when to even think about the separation of that, you're like, well, who am I? And it got to that point in my own life where I had to, like, stop, and I had to learn to say no, and I had to teach myself. Because saying yes was comfortable. It was my familiar, was being in that state. And it was really, really difficult to learn to start to say no. Learn to then be like, what would I choose? If I'm not serving this person or serving this person, like, what do I actually want? And I think that's the hardest thing. It's like, it's more comfortable to stay with what you know. Than to be in the vulnerable of the unknown.
And in that instance, the scariest would be to sit with yourself, because you have let that side of you go. And I think it's important to specify also, like you mentioned, the, like, there's a difference between nice and kind. Like, avoiding being nice doesn't mean be an asshole. Right? Like, don't be an asshole. It's just, like, try to be kind, where it comes from a place of not, I'm supposed to do this, or, like, this is the relationship I have to this person, like, whether it be a mother, brother, like, whatever it is, or a partner, anything, like, I'm supposed to do this. That is the people pleasing. That is the being nice. Because this is the relationship or the connection I had with them, I'm supposed to do these things. But being kind means, like, I want to do these things for this person. Like, maybe sometimes it's not a time that I can do it, where I'm dealing with my own thing. So then, give it time. Be like, hey, I'll get back to this. I'll do this. But I want to do this for this person. And make sure you do that. Like, you can go slightly out of your way, but don't, like you mentioned, don't sacrifice your own needs. And like, I think that's that good separation between nice and kind, where it's wanting to do it rather than being, you're supposed to do it.
It's like the sweet spot in between. And like you say, like, when you overcommit and you say yes to things that your body is saying no to or internally saying no, like, it just breeds resentment. Mm-hmm. And as I said in the workshop, like, for me, resentment, and I don't know why, is always like this idea of a banana in a kitchen cupboard that you've left, and it's this beautiful yellow fruit, and you put it in this cupboard, you close the door, you go away for like 2 weeks, you open it up, and it's just festering, it's furry, there's probably some animals have eaten it, there's some flies. Like, that for me is like the energetic of resentment, like this slow, like, it's not like anger that comes up and then you express it and you let it out and everyone knows about it. Resentment can be hidden, and no one can know about it, and then before you know it, you're doing too much for others, and this like feeling is coming on, and the voice in your head is there, they're taking advantage of you, like
all negatives,
exactly,
right?
And then it's like, actually, who asked you to do these things? Maybe someone asked you, but you had a choice, yes or no. And that's where the power of like communication comes in, because, you know, if someone asks you to do something and you're a bit of a shit and you're not being nice, like, okay, not being nice, when you're being rude, like, there's a difference, no? And you can communicate and say, like, I'm really sorry, I can't help you this week. I'm actually really busy with work and, you know, I really don't have the time to help you. That's fine.
Yeah.
You have to communicate it out. If you ignore someone and then they're like, why are they ignoring me? Of course, you're going to maybe have issues or emotions are going to come up. But if you can honestly communicate, and it's teaching yourself to find that safety in the communication, because a lot of the times it will maybe be something in childhood that safety wasn't around, or if maybe, you know, didn't feel safe to express yourself. And because it wasn't modeled to you, that deep-rooted pattern that you're running off doesn't feel safety. But with all these programs and patterns we're running off, we can rewire them. We can rewrite them. So when we bring this like awareness into the unconscious parts of ourselves, we can start to question it, get curious, and be like, ah, I get to change this. Maybe this was a coping mechanism that I was had to adopt for a long time, but right now I have a choice. Do I want to be that person? Or can I start, and it takes practice, it takes a lot of practice, but can I start to become someone else?
Exactly. And also that, like you mentioned, the choice of like, even if someone asks you, you have that choice, right? And where that feels lost is when people have those, these are what I'm supposed to do for these people because they have done this. There's that whole narrative of like, I owe this person something because they have sacrificed so much. But that only stops that you feel like you don't have a choice. You can't say no. They're not asking. They're like telling you need to do this. But when actually they're asking, like they're asking, can you do this? And being able to say, and I saw this really nice thing where no is a full sentence.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to explain why you can't. Like
yeah.
if they ask, yes, you can share that. But you don't have to start by saying why you can't do it. Like you can just say, no, I can't. And that is a full sentence. And then if they're curious, they can ask you and you can share that. If you're not comfortable, you cannot share it. If it's a personal reason or someone asked you not to share that, you cannot. So like, then it's important also finding people who understand that form of communication. Because communication is a two-way thing, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're pushing me to try and get something out of me and it's pushing me out of my comfort zone, that's where those boundaries and stuff come in. I need to know to step out of it. And know when to like set that, okay, like I need to either explain this to this person, if they still don't get it, kind of distance myself a bit. Not obviously cut them out of your life if they're someone important, but learn to distance, and maybe then they'll be a bit more aware, like, oh, like why is this person distancing? Then you can communicate that again.
Yeah.
So then you're bringing that awareness into that situation also, even if the other person doesn't get it. Like for example, if you told yourself 10 years ago that there were people pleasing, they would have argued with you, defended themselves, right? They would have been that full, like, no, but you're telling me about myself kind of thing.
Exactly. You don't know me. I'm doing this because I have to. You don't get it. Like, you don't understand. And, you know, when you start to make these changes, like, people are going to, it's going to cause, not an issue, but it's going to cause
friction.
A friction. Yeah, exactly. Because when you've said yes all your life and then suddenly you say no, everyone's going to look at you like, why? And fair enough, like if you're going to make a change, and it takes a lot of confidence and to just be able to say no. No is a full sentence, but also, oof, I don't think I'm even at the confidence of just leaving it at no. I'm such an over, I've got to explain this, and I've got to tell them why. And even when we've had conversations, she's been like, just, you can just say no. Like, that's fine. But, you know, I think it's really important to realize that if you're going to make changes, people will cause friction with people, and that's okay. That's fine because you're making changes. But also, the one way to enforce change is practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're one of those people that find it really hard to say no, like, practice it. I know it sounds silly, but just, like, practice at home. Practice the sentence. Maybe your friend has asked you something and, you know, they're like, oh, can you come help me next Friday? And that's, like, the one day you've given yourself off and you love them and you really want to help them, but actually you're exhausted because you've been working really hard and you know that one day is going to give you the energy you need. Instead of saying yes or no straight away, say, like, I'll get back to you. Mm. Like, that gives you that pause to then go home and be like, shit, I've got to say no, but I don't know how to, and I feel scared to say how to, so I'm going to practice. Okay, no, I'm really sorry. I can't help you because, and explain, I'm exhausted. I've been really stressed. I need this day off for myself. However, I'm free the next day. Yeah. Like, then comes in compromise.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I feel like when you don't do that to people, you take away their choice. And if you fully explain yourself and someone still is mean to you, well, then maybe they shouldn't be around and maybe there's a boundary of certain people you can tell. But if you fully communicate your needs and say, like, I know this is so important to me, please, can we maybe do another day? Most people are going to say, yes, that's fine. Or,
yeah. And someone, I think at the workshop also mentioned it, like, when you say yes in those instances, you are not fully present and you are not giving it your all. So it seems like, even though you said yes, and that's a big deal for you because you went out of your way, you sacrificed your own rest or like whatever it is you needed to do that, this person is like well, you seem like you don't care.
Yeah.
Like then you get defensive again. Like, what do you mean? Like, I put so much into this to actually even be here. But for them, it's like they don't understand that because you didn't communicate that.
Exactly.
So they don't know that side of like, this is you being so tired and still turning up. If you had communicated, they would have really appreciated you even turning up. Because they didn't know, it seems like you're half-hearted, you know?
Exactly.
And then it builds up tension again. It's like, because someone, I think, at the workshop said, when they always say yes to things like that and they go for it, people think that they don't even care or they don't even want to be there. Like, it's visible. Like, even though you're being there for the person and you're supposed to do it, they're a friend. Like, you all have all the justifications in your head.
Well, I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you wanted, me to be here and I'm here.
Exactly. So then you start getting defensive also because you have sacrificed yourself for this, which is a pretty big thing. But they don't know that.
Yeah.
Like, because you haven't communicated it.
Yeah, because how would they know? Exactly. How would anyone know? No one knows the 10 voices that go off on our head all the time and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think it is definitely a journey.
Mm.
And definitely my partner, Terzan, he is so honest.
Yeah.
Like, so honest. And I think having someone so opposite to me has really helped me see the safety. Like, he can be honest and say no or express himself and the world doesn't end. Because when you're so conditioned to self-sacrifice, to say no feels like the end of the world.
Mm.
Like, it's a full body, like, tensing everything. Like, it's crazy. And it may sound like silly for people who don't understand that, but people aren't you're choosing to people please, but it's so deeply wired that the whole level of safety. And so he's really showed me that, like, oh, no one died.
Yeah.
No one, the world didn't end. You know, I wasn't abandoned or I can. And within the last 2 years, it has really, like, helped me in ways that, yes, triggers me also, but I know that resistance within me is showing me there's light through that darkness. Like, the trigger is showing me that there's something within you that you hide.
Yeah.
And it's going to show you how to come through this if you follow it. And it's really helped me in ways that I can't even acknowledge right now because it's come so more integrated.
Yeah.
Almost like you've forgotten what it was like. But it's having people around you that show you that.
Exactly.
Is really powerful. Because if everyone's around you as a people pleaser, you're just going to be people pleasing for forever. And the important thing to know about people pleasing is that, and this is hard, and I would have found it hard to receive this 10 years ago, but, like, you're not being nice. You're not doing it from your heart space.
Is that
kindness? You're not being kind, sorry. You're not doing this from your heart space. And like, that's where you want to live, right? You want to be in that kind of authenticity and in that space of like giving and sharing, and it's not from there.
Yeah.
And like reminding yourself that and creating that separation, like, is this what I want to do? Or is this fear? Am I being nice or am I being kind? Mm. You really have to get responsible with yourself, because we're all adults.
Yeah.
And we've all had stuff happen to us, big or small. And it didn't have to be something big to have happened to have these patterns come in.
Mm.
It's just safety was had to be created.
A repeated kind of pattern.
Exactly.
Right? And I think what you mentioned is really good, like, because when you're hardwired to see it that way, like, you think the world will end, right? But having a person like that who keeps practicing it continuously, and you keep seeing, like, proof of that it's not going to be that bad. Like, this can be done and things get better. Like, you know, you see that side of it also. It's not just that, oh, the world won't end, but, like, things turn out better. Better communication, better relationships, like, you know, everything improves. So, like, seeing that also, like, is a really helpful thing for someone who is, like, hardwired to people, please. Seeing that, like, proof of concept kind of thing, right? And also, I think something you mentioned at the workshop, where it's, when you be nice, it's not from a, like, you just mentioned it as well, not from a, from the heart space.
Yeah.
It's from a space of fear. And, like, I heard that and I was like, oh, like, that's such a cool way of, like, even explaining the nice and kindness, right? Because you're doing it out of fear, like, the world will end, or this is what I'm supposed to do, I'll be abandoned. Like, those are all the rationale that you have justified with, okay, if I do this, things are going to be better. And that's the being nice thing. Like, I want to keep the peace. But then going into kindness, it's like, it's from your heart space, right? Like, you're loving yourself and loving others. And then when it's abundant with yourself, you can actually share it with others.
Yeah.
Because others, you're just going into situations miserable. Like, you're trying to be nice just to satisfy everyone, but you're not even bringing joy to those situations, you know? Because you're drained, you're not happy with yourself, you're not kind to yourself, so you can't show kindness to others. You think your presence there is being kind, but you're just killing the mood in a sense, you know? Because you're not fully there, you know, fully present. And I feel like that is hard to see when you're in that situation, because it feels like you're sacrificing a lot.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful way of saying it. It's like, it's not, instead of thinking of it like, I'm present, I'm physically here, I've showed up, think of the energy behind it.
Mm.
I think there's it, like, are you bringing joy?
Exactly.
Like, the energetics of it, like, you know, happiness breeds happiness, sadness breeds sadness, you know, like, what are you bringing in? And I think the nice and the kind thing is like a perfect example, when we've like all been in the past in relationships where, or you hear the story where it's like, oh, I didn't leave her because I didn't want to be mean. And, you know, you really think about that, like, oh, we stayed together because, you know, I didn't know how to tell my partner and all that kind of thing. It's like, the kind thing to do would be to end something.
Yeah.
Same with a job. You know, like, you can look at a relationship and be like, if we're not happy, you deserve happiness and I deserve happiness. And together, this equation is not creating happiness. Mm. The kind thing to do would to be end it. Whereas so many times, like, oh, I just want to be nice.
Yeah.
I don't know how to hurt them. And you think that being kind and ending something is nicer than dragging it out and wasting someone's time. Like, I think it's the, you know, you think about resentment and you think about being nice, it's the facade. The illusion is not disturbed. The happy family looks great. The relationship looks perfect. Let's just not put another photo on Instagram and everyone will think we've got our shit together. And it's like realizing that most things in life are messy. And they don't look how we think they're going to look, but they feel certain ways. You know, I always remind myself, like, Jess, it doesn't matter what life looks like. It's how it feels.
Exactly.
So, like, follow the feelings. That's why I always, when I get too into my businesses and having to create aesthetics and having to have the perfect kind of, like, you know, like, pamphlets and info and all this and getting stuck behind the aesthetic of how things look, and I'm like, Jess, it's how it feels.
Yeah.
Focus on the energy behind what you're bringing into every situation, how you're showing up to the world, how you're showing up for others, and focus on that and it will just look good because the energy is good.
Yeah. And people will get that feeling as well, right?
Exactly.
That's part. And I think what you mentioned to, like, say relationships or jobs, like, people then pursue the superficial, where it's like, oh, let's get married, let's have a kid. Like, that will make it better. Not focusing on the thing that would actually improve things, which is communication.
Exactly.
And, like, when you communicate, it might be difficult where you come to the realization of us being together is not right. Right? And to get to that, even you need to communicate. Because it's always jump into the conclusion of, if we do something external, it will make things better. Like, yeah. We just need to find something that will make this work.
Yeah. Or what society has said we should do.
Exactly, yeah.
We should be, look how old we are. We should have had kids. Or should get married.
Is a happy family because they're married. Yeah. No, it's because their communication is good. Like, yeah. There's something deeper that they're working on constantly that makes it better. And I think now move into what we need to align with, which is a very important thing. Like you mentioned, the setting boundaries, communication, and what is?
And values. And I think values, that's it. Like, yeah. First, I always say, like, when we let go, like, we have to be confident enough to let go to make space in our lives, because we're not waiting for life to happen. We're, like, surrendering. We're letting go. Okay, if I want to align with myself more authentically and be in my self-expression, then I have to let go of people-pleasing, and I have to do that first. I'm not going to do that when.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get a little bit confident, I'm going to trust my nervous system, I'm going to bring in some practices, some tools that allows me to learn to let go of that. And then what do I have to do? I have to align with my values. And when you align with your values, you've got to set boundaries. And boundaries, again, for me, as I like to say recovering people pleaser, I like that sentence. And to then learn to set boundaries, like, that's hard. Because to set a healthy boundary, you have to know who you are. You have to know what your values are. And what is it that was written the other day that I really loved? And it was like, a boundary is where you end and the other person begins.
Ooh.
And I just love that so much. It's like, a boundary is not keeping people out. It's showing people how to love you, how to care for you. Mm. Showing people what your needs and values are, because we all have values. We all have core values. We have needs. We have wants and we have desires. And we're allowed all of them, and they're allowed to be different. And showing people where to meet you at.
Mm.
Like, I imagine it also, you know, like a boundary is a wall or where your plot of land ends. Like, I imagine it like your energy field, and then my boundary is here. That's where my values are, and that's where my desires are, and you get to come into that. And I think that was another beautiful thing, where it's like, you choose, you are the gatekeeper of your life. You choose what you let in and what you don't let in. And again, subconsciously. Because again, it can feel like, I don't choose that. They push my boundaries there. And yes, you're letting them. And maybe from a pattern or a program that you're not aware of, but you always have a choice to set a boundary. Mm. And it's never going to be easy.
Yeah, I think that boundaries are a very difficult thing to understand, know how to set, like implement. Like, justify also. I feel like that's the hardest thing, because we have justified so much of the people pleasing and all the qualities that, like, you know, feel so comfortable that setting boundaries feel like you're going to really, like, it's like you're intentionally trying to break relationships, or like that's the,
yes,
you know, conditioning that
trying
you have.
To hurt people.
Exactly.
Or
like that whole, you're not being nice, you're being rude, you're trying to break relationships. Even for me now, like, after COVID, I made a massive change in my life with, like, following my interests and stuff like that. And I had to kind of, it naturally happened where, like, my friendships got distant more than they were, like, even with family. And, like, because, like, I don't go out partying. I don't go for dinners. Like, I don't go for a lot of things because, like, I prioritize myself in certain ways. And I missed a lot of things because of that. And I, like, in my head, I'm like, am I going too far? Like, am I being too rude? Like, can I actually give this time? Like, it's social time as well, right? Because then you're like, that's also important. Because a lot of people go out and go for social gatherings, even if it's going to, like, be harmful to their life. It's like, this is social. Like, we're humans. We're social beings, right? Like, you crave that. So then it's like, am I, like, going too far by detaching myself? So I feel like that's really hard to set that line and know your values, know your boundaries. But I feel like it's very important. And I feel like that comes from a lot of, like you mentioned, it's not just the communication of the external, but the internal communication. Because it's like, what are the stories you're telling yourself? What are the constant messages or, like, narratives you're telling yourself in those instances? And being the observer of it, rather than like trying to justify it. Or like if you view that thought or that idea or that narrative you have told yourself with judgment, you're going to be defensive. You're going to try to find like a justification for it. There's always a justification for it. But then if you just sit and observe it as a viewer and you think of that being a friend of yours telling you that, like, will it upset you? Will you understand it? Like, what would you question? Then question yourself with that. Like, if someone tells you, oh, I don't want to go out, like, why? Like, what's the reason? I don't feel like going out. Like, what's the feeling? Like, why don't you feel like going out? Then, like, answer it to yourself. Like, that's the first step of getting to even being able to tell other people, knowing what it is to even tell other people, right? So I feel like communication, both ways, internally and externally, are very important. And I feel like that's the first step, and knowing what communication is. Because I recently started doing a course on communication, because I realized that that's something I need to improve as well, because I have so many conditions that hinder my ability to communicate a lot. For the longest time, I thought communication was if you know the language well enough and you're grammatically correct, that's communication. That's all you need. Not knowing that it's so much, that's like one part of it, like a small part of it also. It includes your voice, your tone. Like if you're monotone throughout, which I realize I do a lot, like I don't have the fluctuations that create interest. So that's something I need to learn. Then things like using hand gestures, like your facial expressions, your body language, your attentiveness. Because communication is not just being able to respond or like give an answer. It's about trying to understand the other person, right? Because a lot of the times that's where the nice also comes from. Because I might disagree with you with something, but if we start talking on it, I'll be defensive. And like I'll be trying to prove my point and like argue with you that your point is wrong. But then it's about being able to express my point so that you can understand it, and asking questions and paying attention to what you're saying to understand your side of it. So then we can disagree. It doesn't mean like one of us has to change our opinion or like the way we believe in that thing, but we can understand each other while still believing in two different things.
And I think that's the hard thing with today's society, because we're almost taught that we can't.
Yeah, it's, you know, one or the other.
Exactly. Or like, if you have a difference of opinion, you can't be friends. Or if you don't agree on everything, you can't like each other. Like this whole council culture, like, it's like, oh, if you disagree with me, then you're out of my life. Yeah. And it's like, well, actually healthy debate and communicating and talking and discussing actually expands and grows your awareness, right? And that's so important, because it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to have an opinion and then change your mind. And I think that's the also very interesting thing that you said about understanding your own boundaries and listening to that inner voice and almost like externalizing your internal world, is like also realizing that your boundaries can change. Exactly. It's like that idea of that I am this person, this is set in stone, and then if I change my mind, I'm a failure, or people will think I'm stupid. Mm. And like, well, growth, everything's ever evolving in every moment. And it's like that giving yourself that forgiveness of like, oh, I thought something different, and now someone else has given me a different like view or perspective to think of. Wow, that's awesome. Instead of attaching a negative of like, oh my gosh, I was wrong, I feel embarrassed, yeah, or I shouldn't say that. And it's like, no, you're in every moment able to learn more,
yeah,
or to understand deeper or more. And that's really powerful. But it tends to be that kind of very linear outlook of life that we're like, no, we judge ourselves too much. And like, maybe when you set boundaries, like at first, yeah, you have more boundaries on a certain area of your life. And then maybe after a few months it evolves, because that's more integrated. Yeah. You know, when we set boundaries for the first time, I remember when I spent a lot of my 20s going out, partying, drinking, and I didn't know I could say no to this because all my friends did it. So I would be like at a bar having a good time, and then like I'd be like, I'm ready to go. Like always just waiting for everyone to go home. That was like my favorite time. When everyone went around someone's house and you stayed out a bit longer, but like my whole time was waiting to go home. And I never really thought about it. I'd just be like, oh, I'm waiting for everyone to go home. I have to bear this to then go home. And it was just like, when I first started like setting boundaries, people like, want to go out? Like, do you want to go out? I'd be like, no. And like, because I didn't know how to set a boundary, they'd be so solid. Like, I don't want to go for coffee. No, leave me alone. And that's like, Imagine, like, when you birth something new into the world, like a toddler falling around and clumsying. Like, you're allowed to have that side of it because you're like, I have to be really enforceful because I don't know how to bring the softness in, because it's almost like you're saying no to yourself.
Yeah.
You're shouting at yourself, no, I don't want to do that. And it's like, okay, fine, you don't have to come with me. Like, that's okay. And it's like, okay, good. And then you're like, okay, I'm proud.
Yeah, because you're trying to give attention to that inner voice.
Yeah.
Like, your body and your mind saying no. You're like screaming it out loud because you're like, I need this to be heard. Like, all this time I've been ignoring that voice. And like, now I need to bring attention to that because that is telling me what I truly need, right? It's being honest in that instance. Your body's being honest with you of this is what I need, this is what I feel like. And I think as I can relate to the partying a lot and waiting till everything is done, like the fear of missing out is kind of there. But then it's also, oh, in this place I'm distracted with all these people, like, so it feels better than me going home and being with myself, because I don't understand that. Because I'm so detached and so, like, conditioned to this extent, I'm not comfortable even listening to myself. Because those boundaries seem extreme. The things my body or myself is asking me to do seem, like, silly. Like, you know, society has told me, like, that's too much, that's rude, or, like, all those conditionings. You're like, I don't want to listen to that voice. That voice sounds extreme. So then it's, like, bringing that attention to that voice, like, and not having to do everything, just even being able to listen to it. This is what my body is saying. I feel tired. Then you make the decision after that. Like, okay, can I still, like, maybe have a coffee and then go? Like, finding that, like, reasoning, not reasoning as well, like, finding the middle ground.
Yeah.
Of, is this important to go? Like, let's say it's, like, your parents' birthday and you're feeling tired. You'd still want to go, right? You'll find a way to work around that you can go. Maybe you go for like 2 hours and you're like, hey, I'm really tired. Communicate that. I'm really tired. I can stay here for only 2 hours. I've been working the whole day. I'm here for 2 hours and then I'm going. And then they're informed as well, so that 2 hours they can do whatever they want to do as the family, get all of that done, and then the rest they can maybe spend with their friends or like work things out. So I think communication both ways is very, very important. And it's that importance of going into, like, how much it extends outwards. Like, for me, a pattern I realized, like, a couple of years ago was, I mean, I was called out by my ex for doing this. And I always start as, like, even if we're having a conversation and I want to go, like, deep and I'm actually interested and I'm agreeing with what you're saying, even, I would start the sentence with, no, and, like, that was just habit. And, like, she told me that each time we talk, she feels demeaned because I would start the sentence with no end. And I didn't even realize I was doing that. For me, I was like, what? No, at that point, I was obviously, like, in my head, I was like, I don't do that. Like, I'm, because my intention wasn't to demean. But then not knowing that that practice, that habit that I got used to, makes someone else feel, like, lesser. Even though I'm agreeing with what they're saying. Like, after that, if I agree with everything they said, still that starting kind of puts them down. And I kind of paid attention to it after that, and I realized I was doing that a lot. And I tried to figure out where it stems from, and I realized my mother does the exact same thing, which is like, it's habit, right? And both of us didn't even know it. And like, now me and my brother have made it a joke where we call my mother, where like, you're agreeing with us, why you say no and started the sentence. And it's just like calling it out. So by doing that, then I looked into, okay, what can I replace that with? I started searching, like, okay, how can I change it and like, what can I replace it with? And something I saw was on this course I'm doing, the guy who was doing it, he had put a reel out saying to help someone feel validated, like rather than even saying yes, but, like I was saying the worst, which is no and. Without saying yes, but, and like adding to it, you say yes and. So you feel like you're adding to the conversation rather than like disagreeing with them and setting up their boundary. So like just using that, even they're a bit more like, oh, we're going back and forth.
Yeah.
And that's such a subconscious thing. It's just a habit of the way you start the sentence.
Yeah.
Like it has nothing to do with this is my intention. It's just that's how you have heard people talk and you mimic that, not knowing how it affects your communication. So it's even small stuff like that, like makes such a big impact. And for me, that's something you can't even like test out with a message or something. Like, that's only in communication where you start sentences with, like, yes and stuff. So whenever I went into that and I caught myself doing it after I've said it, I'll tell the person, I'm sorry, like, that's a habit that I have where I say, but no, even if I'm agreeing with you. And I'm trying to change that to, like, make you feel included in the conversation. So then whenever I even say it sometimes, they're like, oh, you said it. So then I, like, can notice it and intentionally change it little by little.
Yeah.
But another thing that I learned, which I was able to practice, like, while messaging or something, was, I think I told you all also this, rather than saying I'm sorry for stuff, thanking people. So it's like, this helps a lot with, like, work or, I mean, anything, but mainly with work. When, like, let's say, by instance, like, I get late for a meeting. The person is already irritated that they had to wait or that they're late. So if I go to the meeting and I straight away say, oh, I'm so sorry that I'm late, this thing, you're bringing back that emotion that they felt for having to wait and that negativity. And then it becomes even worse when you go to try and explain why you're late, because you're like, look, you're already late. You're wasting more time now by trying to explain it. It doesn't matter. Let's get to why we're here. So rather than saying, I'm sorry I'm late, thanking the person by saying, thank you for being patient. So then you're putting it on them, where you're praising them or putting them up on a pedestal for, you know, being patient or, like, accommodating you. But those are really hard, because in those instances, you're flustered, you're stressed out, like, shit, I made this person late, I'm, like, killing their time. So I started practicing that through emails, because I anyway read my email, like, about thrice. So I check, okay, I've said sorry here. What are the phrases I can replace that sorry with? Like, sorry I'm late can be thank you for being patient. Or, like, sorry I made a mistake can be thank you for understanding.
Yeah.
Or say, like, I made a big mistake or I missed out something, thank you for accommodating. Like, figuring out what the phrases I can replace it with. Because in the moment, that's really hard. You'll be like, thank you for, like, what do I say? So figuring out those phrases in, like, texting or emails and then implementing that at the same time with, like, conversation.
I think that's really smart, because it gives you that time to, like, repeat and rehearse.
Exactly.
Before when you do it, because when the emotion comes in, and also, like, how many of us actually say an authentic sorry? You know what I mean? Sometimes just like, sorry, it's almost like learned behavior that we know. And the same when you're saying words like, yes, but. When you say but, it makes me think of my parents who said yes to something, but actually I need to do something to get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, but, and you're like, oh, here it goes. You know, like, you expect, you're anticipating disappointment. You know, and almost like when you say, like, no, and you're agreeing with someone, for me it almost feels like a power play.
Yeah.
You know, like a dominance within the kind of conversation. Not meaning to, but it's so fascinating when you think about it, all these little things that, you know, that sorry instead of a thank, like, thank you is so much more powerful. The energy behind that word, or sorry, like, oh, I'm so sorry, like, oh, thank you for being accommodating, thank you for being patient, then I'm like, oh, I was patient, I feel good, like,
yeah.
And I think that's also really important about, you know, when you communicate, when you say these things, the power of making someone feel good. Like,
exactly.
I think that's really important, you know, even when we're setting boundaries, even when we're, thank you for understanding that I can't come out. I really appreciate that from you. Like, it's almost like through that acknowledgement of the other person, you're able to accept the boundary setting of yourself.
Exactly.
You know, it's almost like that self-forgiveness, because if we're all forever reflecting back situations, relationships, moments in life, then to actually have the courage to say thank you, you're acknowledging a part of yourself. You know, if you can say to someone, thanks so much for being patient with me, like, okay, let's get on with the day now, or thank you so much for being understanding, I really appreciate it, then you're accepting part of yourself deeper. As where if you're saying sorry, it's almost like a part of you is like, you're just like, you're not being accountable. You kind of just like, makes me think of this as like a kid being like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to. You know what I mean?
The sarcasm in it.
Be accountable and like use your communication wisely, and because it has a huge effect. And, you know, the more you think about it, the more, like, I think about communication more and more, and I'm like, wow, it is everything. You know, like, you can have, say you have a 10-year relationship, and then all this resentment is building up because you haven't communicated. You can ruin something that's lasted 10 years in a sentence.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like, you can, you know, those times when you argue and you haven't said what you want, and then suddenly everything comes out, and you've said something so mean that the other person's like, I can't. like, I can't see you. Yeah. I see you differently now because you've held on to this for so long. It's like pulling back like a slingshot and then letting it go. And then the same with also that, like, you can really hurt someone, but then you can rebuild that with authentic communication. Like, it really is so powerful. And it does take that balance of knowing the internal to the external, to forgiving yourself, because it's never going to come out right, for allowing yourself to rehearse, to practice the changes you want to make, and forgiving others for not showing up, forgiving yourself. And it's this whole, like, mess of a mix that we have to allow, that it's going to be, and be okay with that. It's like being okay with riding the wave of it all, and like setting boundaries and trying to, you know, stumble it out, like, oh, like not getting your words out, and instead of punishing yourself or like blaming the other person, they didn't understand. Well, maybe did I say it well enough?
Yeah, okay, exactly. Didn't.
But that takes so much emotional detachment. Even when you said there about, you know, you explain to people, oh, this is a habit and I want to change it. Like, I'm like, fuck, that takes a lot of emotional attachment, because you're literally saying to them, like, you're standing in front and saying, I'm vulnerably admitting that there is something I want to change within myself, and I'm allowing you to see that.
Yeah.
And if someone was like, oh, you said it again, I'd have been like, fuck you. Like, I would have been like, it's hard, because there's so, I'd have been like, I told you that, but you can't throw it against me. Like, I would get defensive. Like, I know when you said that, I was like, oof, that's bold. And it takes that bravery.
Yeah.
And it takes that kind of, like, detachment from our emotions, detaching from it all and being like, okay, I want to change. And to make changes, something has to change. You know, it's quite simple when you look at it from a different perspective. Yeah. But in the thick of it, it's really messy.
And I think coming out of that, like, idea of, like, oh, I told you, and like getting annoyed when they say it, for me, there it was important with reframing that whole negative and positive. Like, rather than being like, oh, you telling me that is you trying to, like, call me out, or like seeing that in a negative, for me it was more like, oh, you're paying attention to what I'm saying. Yeah. That, like, you can help me get over this thing that I'm, this is, so it's, rather than being like, oh, this is negative, this is positive, it's just, this is different.
Yeah.
So whenever you use a form like, this is taller, this is shorter, this is different, like that judgment of it, when you just say this is different, how is it different? That is not a comparison of good or bad, negative or positive. It's more of like even when you take people, right? People are different. Like, some actions might be, like, you know, bad or like harmful to other people, but there might be sides of them that are very positive compared to someone who does like so many generally accepted, like, you know, good things, like, by society. They might be an asshole as a person, you know, they might not be happy with what they're doing, not bring joy to it, but they're doing everything right.
Yeah.
But then if someone, like, someone can have flaws, and like looking at that being different, like, changes so much. Like, you don't even go into those situations. Like, if someone sees me after like 5 years now, and it has happened so many times recently, and they're like, oh, you have gained weight, or oh, you have a stomach, like, you know, stuff like that. The feeling is there of being hurt. Like, you do get hurt, that emotion comes in, but then I'm like, oh, what? How long ago did they see me to have seen that different? Oh, so they're paying attention to me, like, to have noticed that difference. Like, that means someone has been paying attention to you and like observing you, right? And like, they see a difference in you. Like, some people even tell me, oh, you're like calmer, or like you're quieter, like what's the change? And like, oh, you're curious about me. Rather than be like, what, you want me to talk? Like, or get in defensive. It's not looking at it, not having a positive or negative attached to it. They're taking out that judgment of what was said. But rather like viewing what I'm feeling as an observer and what they said as an observer. Like, why did they say that? And then don't get into my head of thinking, oh, why did they say that? They're trying to hurt me. Like, ask them. Like, oh, why did you say that? Like, last time, when did you last see me? Like, for you to have had that observation, not judgment or negative opinion, it's just that observation. So, like, that has helped me a lot, because then I can look at it like, oh, you're trying to help. Like, I can reframe it in my head. Like, we do the whole nice thing of, oh, it might hurt them, I shouldn't say that, I should say this, it'll make them feel good. It's reframing that in a, you know, in a different way.
Yeah.
Rather than it being the people pleasing, it being the, like, non-judgmental observer of, like, what was said and what you can respond with.
And I think that's like that non-judgmental observer. That's where like meditation and breath work, it all ties in so beautiful, because you create that pause in your life. Like when you introduce a breath work practice, a meditation practice, you know, a yoga practice, you know, not only do you bring your mind and body into harmony, either through movement or breath or stillness, but you create that kind of pause. And even when you say those things, I was like, oof. I struggle with being defensive, and I know, and even my partner says to me, like, why are you being defensive? And I feel it now. I feel that like sting and that like boom, and I have a lot of attachment to a lot of things, and it's exhausting, because a lot of the times, even with business, when things go well, I think I've done something good or I've done something right. And then when they don't, I think I've done something bad. And it takes me a lot of work to separate, like a lot of conscious actions every day, because I will get caught in an emotion and I will like almost like want to be in the emotion. Like I want to be pissed off. Brilliant. I want to be annoyed, and I want everyone to know about it, and I'm not going to tell anyone about it. And it's like this self-sabotage, you know? And I am getting better at it, this like, you know, it's but it's really, really hard. Like it's so hard, and there are some areas that I do better at and I find easier, and there's some areas that I'm like, oh, I need to forgive myself for that and try a little bit more. How can I bring in? Maybe I need to, you know, and like I said before, like things change, your life changes, the ebb and flow, the rhythm of your life changes. Maybe when you're pushing yourself to growth, maybe you need to spend more time in the stillness. You know, you need to allow yourself to integrate, to allow your nervous system to build the trust, to find the safety in all the things you're doing. And, you know, meditation is a wonderful tool. Both breathwork and meditation have helped me so much. For me, breathwork is more of an embodied practice, and you, through different breathing techniques, regulate your nervous system more effectively. Mm-hmm. So you kind of feel it. So you feel from that heightened emotion, you almost feel it like dissolving and letting go and coming back to this kind of neutral, non-judgment place. Whereas meditation is also a very beautiful practice, but I find it a lot more challenging, and I think a lot of people would resonate, because there's so much stuff going on in our heads to go to stillness, whereas breath work is kind of like tricks you into it.
Yeah. I think for the meditation thing also, a lot of people have that notion that you have to have a calm mind during meditation, but it's practicing that non-judgmental observer. Like if your mind is like, my mind is racing most mornings, and I've been like meditating for almost like 3 or 4 years now, and it's still like the days I have a lot to get done, it's racing, and I can't stop that. I can't control my thoughts. It's just I sit with it and I'm like, oh, my mind is like really racing today. And like whenever I catch myself going down that thought of dwelling, it's a matter of like, oh, that's a thought, let's let it go. If it's a good idea, even, it's like, oh, that idea will come back, let it go. Getting used to letting those go. And then I feel like breathwork was the best, because like you said, it's that, like that refresh, like everything that I've pent up just gets released. And it's like a fresh start. So like everything in my body and like emotionally that I have built up, kind of you can like let it go, which made it so much easier to be non-judgmental in like actual situations where my emotions are involved. So like I'm still getting through it. There are points I still snap, I still get angry with stuff, I still get upset and like might lash out, but it's getting much easier not to go to that extent of dwelling in it and like you mentioned, like holding on to it and being like, I'm angry, but I don't want to tell anyone. I want to let it go, but I can't. Like I'm like, I want to, but like my body's not letting me. So that breathwork helps like get all those past stuff that has pent it up, like get it all out. So that combination for me is just amazing. Yeah, like the meditation and breathwork.
It's so good. And also it's like, it's building that trust. It's like telling yourself that maybe, yes, you had to dwell on and hold on to it. And, you know, it's for a while, because that's what safety felt like. Mm. You know, and it's really allowing yourself, especially with something like people pleasing, for example. So when I first started going on this journey, like I would, whatever I was coming up with, I would bring it into my breathwork practice, and I would like allow that to be like, okay, this is my intention, is to let this go, or to feel more strength in that, and just allow yourself for that to be your intention, and then take it to the breath. Let it go to the breath, allow yourself to move it through your body. And then by the end of like 10 minutes, even just 10 minutes, 5 minutes, like even just 5 minutes, you're like, okay, that's fine, I think I can carry on with life now. You know, and when you do something like a longer 1-hour breathwork practice, you're like, nothing matters. Nothing matters. I have everything together. And then the next morning you're like, everything matters, but I know it doesn't matter at the same time. And you catch yourself, like, even those days where I'm like busy, loads of stuff to do, I always catch what something that my dad said to me once is that you can only do one thing at once well. Only do one thing at a time well. And I tell myself that. And it's that trust. You know, sometimes when you have a thought and you're like, oh my God, I need to write that down right now, because you don't trust the thought will come back.
It's almost like
it's gone forever and you're never going to think about it. And you're like writing notes. And I love organizing and that kind of thing. But it's like also honoring, like, that was a great idea. It will come back when I need it.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's up here.
That
it
was hasn't really gone difficult.
And like, it's like writing everything down and like really like one thing at a time, Jess. One thing at a time. Then also, like, you look at, and with the internet the way it is, you can kind of see loads of inspiring people and people that maybe run businesses that you want to do, or have even families or a relationship that you want. Like, watch them, see how these people act, you know, and then kind of like, oh, if I want to be successful in business, like, for me, I always hear, like, every single person who's successful in business tells how important it is to, one, clean your room, two, make your bed, and three, spend at least half an hour a day on yourself. Because it's like, the more people demand of you, the more you think that you'd like to expand your business, you'd like to have a family, the more you have to be able to look after yourself. Because more people are wanting more of you. So you have to have that foundation, a bit like we said earlier about relationships. Like, you can add kids, you can add a dog, you can add a house. And if the foundation isn't great and you're not communicating, it's gonna fall the more you stack that tower. So it's like really important to be like, it isn't selfish to look after myself, because the more I look after myself, the more I can look after others.
Yeah.
And just reminding yourself of that, that is a daily reminder. You know, it is a daily reminder. And I think, again, like, with how we're taught about the world, we think it's so linear. We think that this thing will fix me, and then I'm fixed, and then it's a full stop, and then I'm done, and then I can just be happy. And it's like, no, that doesn't work like that. It's forever evolving, it's moving, it's going forward, and then ebbing backwards, and then being like, okay, if I'm gonna leap forward, you think about, like, even like, again, a slingshot, when you think about the energy that's needed to propel yourself forward, you've got to draw it back, you've got to draw in, you've got to set those boundaries and say, I'm not going out. Am I going to spend my energy on going out and meeting loads of people, or am I going to be at home and focusing on my values, what I want, and like making a conscious choice around that?
I think that's a good segue into create, and like, what are some practices or say breathwork stuff that people can do to not obviously be like experts at communicating, or, you know, not be people pleasers, but help them kind of just aid them in that journey of like getting over being like being a recovered people pleaser or like improve their communication skills. What are stuff they can practice?
I'd say the first thing is practice. Rehearse. Firstly, like, I had a really lovely thing the other day, and it was like giving you this massive maths equation, and it was like, what's the answer? And it's like, I can't do that in my head. And it was like, well, then why do you expect to answer every single problem in your head? Write it down.
Yeah.
And writing it down, there's, you know, journaling has a little bit of stigma. It's like a bit woo-woo. It's a bit silly. It's a 9-year-old girl in her room writing, dear diary. But actually, like, I like to reframe it as, like, journaling is like data collection. And in the world of where data is so important, like, everyone wants your data. Because with data, you can create an algorithm. You can create a trend. You can create a forecast, a projection of the future through data, right?
Yeah.
So if you sit down and you write down, okay, what did I say no to today? Say yes to today that I wanted to say no to? How did that make me feel? And get really kind of like, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. Like, just get really honest with yourself. Like, today, I'm going to start writing down when I said, you know, yes instead of no. How that made me feel in my body. You know, what are the boundaries that I feel like? And, you know, when we're talking, people will be resonating and they'll be thinking like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe I need to set that boundary. Maybe you work every Friday and your mom keeps coming over and it's really distracting and you love your mom, but like, you don't want her to come over on Fridays. Communicate it, set that boundary. Mom, I love you, can you come after 4? Because I want to get my work done and I'm going to be able to give you my full attention, and maybe we could go out for coffee and I'd really like that. She's going to say yes. If she doesn't, you need to set that boundary anyway and deal with that afterwards. But like, write those down. What are boundaries I feel like? Look at your life. Look at your relationships. look at your family, look at yourself, how you're choosing to spend time by yourself, look at work, look at your finances. You can break your life down into small segments, then it's easier to look at it that way. Mm. You know, instead of like, what boundaries do I need to set? And you're like, oh, that's a big question.
It's not overwhelming, right?
Make it smaller. Yeah. Okay, with money. Do you overspend? Do you have a budget? Are you too budgeting? You need to have a bit more fun with it. You're like, really have a look at what feels comfortable and uncomfortable, and then bring it to that stillness. Bring it to your breath. Bring it to meditation. Really, there's so many wonderful tools out there that you can do with and you can use, and you can go on YouTube, you can find hundreds of different ones. Like, we are in the age of information. Like, go and find it, see what works for you. You know, if you've got a big thought, go for a walk. You know, ask these questions while you're moving around, get the body, change your energy. I think as when I was learning how to set boundaries, one, it was a lot of journaling, two, breath work. Because you have got that nervous system regulation training where you let go of fear, where you learn safety in the unknown, because at the end of the day, you keep saying yes because no is more scary. Mm. And you don't know what to expect, and because your brain wants you to be on the path of least resistance, it wants the familiar, no matter what that is. So like, bring in that practice, or you know, go to the gym, move your body. How can I build strength in my mind, body, and spirit? How have you found practices or techniques that you found useful? Or
I think for me it was a lot of finding, like you said, we have the, we're blessed with information, so finding people who have got to a point or achieved what I am trying to achieve, and then seeing how they achieved it. And it's not just like taking that and doing only that and believing that that'll work, but it's that advice. And I know that the meaning of advice was kind of different for both of us, because when I said like on this podcast, even like we'll share our advice, I saw you kind of like repel, and I was like, I understood it, because my definition of advice also was like different, like very recently. And for me, advice is someone sharing their experience in what you're facing and how they got over it. It has nothing to do with telling you what to do. I don't like when people tell me what to do or tell me how to do. It's more share your story, share your experience of how you faced it, how it felt for you, and what you did to get over it. So then I find people who share like that, and then take about, like, let's say I find 10 people who share like that, take about 5 that I feel like resonate with me and like suit me, and then I try those. And maybe it's even 3, if you can't try 5 at once, 3. Try. If nothing works, it doesn't feel right, the next 3. Sometimes it might be the thing that you feel like won't resonate with you at all is the one that like feels perfect for you. It's just you had the narrative that that feels weird or that doesn't suit me, not knowing that that's the one that suits you. So going down that path of like curiosity, then exploration, and then discovery, of discovering what works for you best. And it's a time consuming thing. It's like it's straining, because it's a lot of information as well, and then it takes time to try those out, because it's not like you try it for one day and then fix it, right? So trying those out, and for me, stuff that fell into place were trying to find things that I don't need to rely on anything external. So it came to meditation, breath work, yoga, because all of those I can do without any money or without anything. I just need myself there. And now the thing I've come to realize recently is communication, which is my voice, because like, that's the instrument I have. Like, I don't need anything else to feel confident. If I improve my communication, I'll feel confident in any situation, because I know I have that tool or that instrument to use. So figuring out stuff like that was what helped, like worked for me. That was stuff that I can rely on myself. And then I can be proud of myself also. Like, it's like, oh, you did this, you improved this about yourself, and now you can use that in the world to become better or like change.
Yeah, and I think that's so nice, because it's like, it takes an investment of your energy to make change. You know, it takes responsibility, accountability. Like, you can't just do one thing once and expect to change. Like, you have to be consistent. You have to show up for yourself. And especially if you're used to self-abandoning, you don't want to know what it's like to show up for yourself. Mm. So you've got to get practicing at it. You've got to be curious. Okay, what do I like of the... Because, you know, when you look at someone and they inspire you, you think it's something maybe they have, or you externalize it, but really it's an energetic that they're owning, and it's probably just their authenticity. So instead of being like, how can I be that person? What is the energetic they're projecting that maybe I need within me? And then how does that reflect in me through my authenticity? And it's kind of like taking those little micro bits and not expecting, like, I want that person's life and that's going to fulfill me, or I need those things and that's going to fulfill me. It's about, okay, what do I want? What are my beliefs? What really resonates with me at the moment? And then looking at your life, writing those things down. You know, maybe it's family, maybe it's passion, maybe it's cooking, maybe it's, you know, write these things down that light you up, and then look at the areas of your life and see, am I dedicating time to this?
Yeah.
Because if no, then I'm not doing service to myself. Like, you have to dedicate the times for the things you want. And yes, society tells us it's selfish. Yes, we're told that you have to work first because you earn money and then you're validated. And then what? You're 16, you're miserable with loads of money. And then what? Like, everyone always says, you know, like, at the end of their deathbeds, like, I wish I didn't work as much. Yeah. I wish I didn't care as much, you know. And no one's going to remember what you look like, but they remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
And it's the energetics behind it. It's the joy. It's the excitement. And allowing yourself those things is hard. It's really, really hard because, one, it takes vulnerability to say what you want. And I think also the kind of doing one thing once, and then, like, we tend to self-sabotage ourselves because it's like, I don't want to be seen as a failure, so I won't try.
Yeah.
I did it once and it didn't work. And don't get me wrong, I do that. There are times when things get more successful and I'll pull away. And I know it's like, oh, that didn't work out. It's almost like, I'm not to blame. I tried my best and it wasn't meant to be. And yes, okay, sometimes in life you can try your best and you can let go of what's not meant to be, but you have to get to know yourself.
Yeah.
Like, is this a pattern? Is this my coping mechanism? Is this me jumping off a cliff into fear? And, like, building that trust through meditation, through breath work, through yoga is so important, because then you understand who you are.
Yeah.
You understand how to feel in your body. And in the day and age where feelings are so scary, and we've been told not to feel, don't cry, don't shout, don't do this. It's, like, so hardwired into us not to do these things that it takes a lot of courage and repetition and willingness to be seen as a failure and accept that failure is just rerouting. It wasn't meant to be, like, that real surrender of just, like, whatever is meant for me will never pass me by, and really getting confident in that.
Nice. I think that would be a good way to end the podcast as well.
I do too. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Angelo. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this month. I hope that you have a lovely month. And really looking forward to seeing you next time. And as always, remember to breathe. This podcast is a CreatorCast production.